Visiting Australia this week is a leading US gerontologist, Dr. Alan Power. He's here to convince those caring for people with dementia that there's often a better way than drugs to control what can be very difficult behaviours. Alan Power is in our Melbourne studio. Welcome to the Health Report.
Thank you so much for having me, Norman.
What are these behaviours?
Well, I'm going to step even away from the word behaviors. I think that what we have and what I learned, and I worked nearly two decades full-time in residential care, used antipsychotic and other drugs for people who are distressed. And I think the predominant model we've been taught about dementia is really focused on disease, neuropathology. It's very reductionistic and very focused on deficits. And as a result, when somebody is distressed or expresses themselves in other ways, it is seen as a difficult behavior. It is seen as something that rests with that damaged brain. And that has led us into whole paradigms, like saying behavioral and psychological symptoms of dementia, that really put the fault with the person. And if you really think that brain disease is the root cause, then it's a slippery slope to using medications.
So if it's not the disease, what's the cause?
Well, I had to step outside that, and I had to say, you know, neuropathology exists, but it's part of a much larger thing, and that is that it's within the realm of the individual and how that individual experiences the disease process. And so I focused on experience instead of just plain pathology, and came to understand that there's so much more that we don't see, which is the relational, historical, environmental factors around a person, and that really we're talking about, does the person have well-being, and are there things between their illness and the way we care for them that may actually erode those aspects of well-being.
Well, be specific. Tell us a story.
Yeah. Perfect example. Perfect example is if you or I, living without a diagnosis of dementia, were brought to a shower room by somebody we'd never met before, our clothes were removed, and we were showered in a way that maybe we didn't prefer with water that maybe had temperature not to our liking, that would probably bother us. Now, you or I might complain. We might refuse to continue. A person with dementia who maybe can't remember or express themselves or cope with the stressors might shout or strike out. So there's a different response. The dementia has become an enabler of their distress, but it wasn't the root cause. The root cause was the way the shower was presented. And when we blame it on the dementia, then we don't look deeper and we don't find what's really missing.
But what you've just described is probably more appropriate for residential aged care. Plenty of people with dementia are at home and their partners caring for them find that their behaviors can be very difficult.
Aggression,
wandering, mm-hmm. Sleep reversal. There's all sorts of things that happen that when they desperately want to keep their loved one at home, end up in aged care because that's the only place for them. And as you say, the temptation is to put them on very strong life-reducing drugs like antipsychotics.
Yeah. So let's go to the home for a moment and let's take it out of residential care. I've worked for years in the culture change field, mainly through the Eden Alternative and greenhouse models that came from the U.S. And what we've learned is that an institution isn't a building. It's a mindset. It's a way of operating. And when I look at dementia from the lens of these aspects of well-being, and in this case, I'm talking about seven domains: identity, connectedness, security, autonomy, meaning, growth, joy. Let's talk about autonomy for a moment. It is just as easy for a caring family member who has taught the stigma that the person is fading away, that they're incapable, to take away autonomy from a family member as well. So it is just as likely that a person may react to that type of situation in their own home as they do in a care home. And a perfect example of how institutional practices transfer, one of the best ways to help a person who has memory loss is not to rotate staff. It's constant in residential care that people are presented with, to them, strangers to provide very personal care. Well, even in home care, this happens. My friend Sally Magnuson, who's with BBC Glasgow, wrote a book about her mother's life and interviewed a woman whose father lived at home. And over the course of a year, he had 106 different home health workers come to his house to provide personal care. But so these institutional practices happen everywhere.
But in an era where there are more and more people with dementia, even though dementia rates are probably tailing off, is it practical to give this sort of individual care, particularly in residential care?
It is practical, but it requires, that's the third part. So I mentioned the experiential focus. I mentioned the well-being focus. The third part, and this comes from my culture change background, is transforming the care system. Because it's not so much about uncaring people or even uneducated people. It's about a system that still pushes them to focus on tasks, to focus on speed, and to blame the person instead of understanding all the subtle features of the care environment that actually are causing more distress than the person needs to have.
So if you're a, your loved one is going into residential aged care, this is a complete nightmare for people. How do you choose the right place for your loved one? We haven't got much time left, but what are the hallmarks that you should be looking for in a residential aged care facility?
I think the hallmarks are really to take your, almost to close your eyes, forget about how pretty the lobby is, see what it feels like, see how people speak to each other, see how they speak to people living with dementia, and see if they really are focused on the relationship, on the person. That really is where the key is. And, you know, the payoff is that I work with organizations in the U.S. that have actually not only severely reduced but eliminated antipsychotic use. So if this really is just a problem with brain disease, how can you explain somebody who goes from 30% antipsychotics to zero and keeps it there for a long period of time?
And ask them about the rosters to see about the consistency. Alan Power, thank you. Alan Power's books will be on our website. You've been listening to The Health Report. I'm Norman Swan. See you next week.